Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the endarkened corridors of power and shine light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address problems instead of defending positions. Well, it's been a paradox that rational, I use quote marks around rational, that rational observers have been puzzling over for nearly 5 years now. Why is it that so many Christian fundamentalists have gone gaga over Donald Trump, who seems to have embraced every one of the seven deadly sins as virtues? As a joke goes, Trump's greatest asset is his liability, his ability to lie. And yet, many of Trump's Christian followers find truth in his false statements. Well, our guest this week, Byron Belitzos, was a journalist on site at the January 6th MAGA demonstrations at the Capitol. He took photos and informally interviewed dozens of people. He came away with what I find a deep understanding of why people were there, and also of the QAnon phenomenon and the evangelicals' affection for Donald Trump. What were the real concerns these people had that the mainstream press is not talking about? What is the relationship between Trumpism and Christian apocalypticism? Byron Belitzos is an author, editor, journalist, and book publisher, Origins Press, as well as an experienced political activist and advocate of integral politics. He is also a practicing mystic and theologian who has spent the past 2 years studying at Union Theological Seminary in New York. Byron has been politically active since 1969 in a variety of venues and contexts, and he became an early pioneer in the deep politics movement, working closely with David Ray Griffin, Jim Mars, Bill Pepper, and Catherine Austin Fitz. He was the founder and CEO of Origin Press, where he published numerous award-winning books. He was also a board member of the Democratic World Federalists and was co-author of the acclaimed book, One World Democracy. He's co-author and publisher of A Return to Healing, Radical Healthcare Reform and the Future of Medicine, which won a Nautilus Gold Award. He is also the author or co-author of 6 books on religion and spirituality, including Your Evolving Soul and the forthcoming Integral Theodicy. Is that the right word? Is that the right pronunciation? Theodicy?
Yeah, Theodicy, correct.
Okay, I read the Iliad, but I didn't read the Odyssey. Okay. Welcome, Byron. How are you?
Oh, I'm just great, and it's an honor to be on your show. Thanks so much, Steve.
Well, good. I'm excited to have you, too, as well, because of your background both in deep politics and deep religion. In a recent written piece, you've shown the relationship between Trumpism and apocalyptic Christianity. And in fact, it was 5 years ago, as a matter of fact, right as Donald Trump was launching his presidential campaign, that I looked at the Book of Revelations, and I was surprised and amused to find this, you can look it up, as Casey Stengel used to say, to find that a sign that the end times were upon us, and I quote, "and the last trump shall blow." Okay? Well, you know, I got a lot of comic mileage out of that over the past several years, but there may be more to it. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about this interesting relationship between apocalyptic Christianity and Trumpism?
Oh, gosh, it's just so many parts and pieces to pull together. See if we can decipher this together, Steve, because, okay. You know, we're all kind of journalists, citizen journalists trying to track down what this is all about. And I have a little bit of an extra, sense of this because I do identify as a Christian as well as a Buddhist and other things. So. Christian Buddhist and also a Urantia book student. And I have been at a Christian seminary, albeit left Christian. This is left liberal Christianity, for the last 2 years. And, the subject has come up quite a bit in classrooms because of, certainly Trump being the president and, students trying to figure out with the professors what this is all about. And in particular, I studied with a guy named Gary Dorian, who's one of the world's leading observers of this phenomenon of, current sort of politics and religion and that nexus. So I guess some of this comes from Gary Dorian's work, but a lot of it comes from, my own reading and observation. But in short, I just think that the religious right needed to attach itself to a kind of idol who became their savior. And there are good reasons for it and of course, bad reasons for it. So, I think maybe start with the sort of on the good side is this, this search for a way to put an end to sort of conscious, or how shall I put it, what they call sin, I think, which is better called iniquity, which is they being, fundamentalist Christians think of as satanic. The religion of Satan, so to speak. And so there's this perception all the way back to the beginning of the Bible itself, that there is this presence of iniquity on the planet that Jesus came to put an end to and did in a certain sense put an end to the satanic reign on the planet. But it says clearly in the Bible that He didn't complete the job, but that it would be completed at the end of time. And that's where you get, the trump will blow, at the end of time, where Trump pops up and something or somebody needed to pull this together politically as a kind of platform for the religious and prophetic events that they think is going to happen. So, that's one way to put it. So I'll let you dive into that with me.
Okay. Well, first of all, it seems kind of odd because I've read a little bit about this apocalyptic Christianity, et cetera. Interestingly, it had its origins right around the same time as the Wahhabist movement in Islam. So I think that I would look at these as kind of revisionist views of ancient teachings that somehow both came about in the late 1900s in certain regard. And maybe you have a modification or correction on that. But what I'm really interested in is two things. Number one, if these people think the world is going to end anyway, what do they care? And then number two, how do they wrap themselves around somebody who is to the observation of me and lots and lots and lots of other people who are from New York, recognize Donald Trump as a hoodlum wannabe. And how can you project all of this goodness onto such, to use your word, iniquity?
Yeah, well, it's really not so much the facts of the case, but it's, what people believe about it. And what I think really happened is there was a, let's maybe just jump further back in time, that Christian apocalypticism is in every generation from the beginning. It's really not something that's just modern. It's pre-modern. It was in the original, stories in the gospel. There's a sense of apocalyptical end of the Roman Empire. I mean, that was really, something Jesus was contending with, because there were the so-called zealots, mm-hmm. who thought that he'd be the Messiah, and the Messiah was going to call down fire on the Roman empire and liberate the Jews, right? So, I mean, that's just built in to the mentality. And it's really hard to be, a biblical Christian without thinking that, oh, it's in my generation this thing's going to happen. This is, so it's not like the end of the world, not really at all. It's really just the end of the reign of the satanic evils in the world, right? So it's, the so-called end of the world, it's the end of the iniquitous one and his dominion. So, but it's, popular, sort of lore. It's like the end of everything and sort of the planet blows up or something. But that's not the Christian view. Sort of the left behind idea, right? So, yeah. So there's the very extreme idea of the rapture, which is where the real Christians are, they have elevators that take them up to heaven, so to speak. And so what's left behind is the rest of us who don't believe what they believe. But that's an extreme view. But it's more the mainstream of view, if you can say there's a mainstream here, is that it's really kind of the putting an end to Satan's reign on planet Earth and then the coming of a golden age. Mm-hmm. So how did Trump get to be in the position of sort of the savior, you might say?
Yeah.
So what you see with this stuff, if you look at the history, you see that they very often attach themselves to somebody who represents these hopes. Almost every generation, even Martin Luther, any of the eras, there was, Luther was like that sort of person, like Trump in a way, although Luther was much more virtuous, but this is a person who's going to put an end of the reign of Satan, who was represented as the Pope, right? Mm-hmm. So that the medieval Pope was seen as Satan's representative, and so Luther and his revolution, which is what it was, the Reformation, was an apocalyptic movement to get rid of Rome, to get rid of the Pope, who really was evil, actually. So, it happens in almost every generation. I mean, we had the millenarians of the 19th century in the United States, who thought that all this was going to come to a culmination. I think it was the 1848. And they didn't have a political leader, but they had a politics that went with it. And it wasn't necessarily right-wing either. And sometimes these were left-wing sort of rebellions as well. For example, the social gospel movement, which is leftist, you might say, also was apocalyptical and also, had a very big provenance in the United States in the late 19th century, early 20th century. And there was a politics involved with that. So it's just kind of an archetype of Christian thought that now, happens to had glommed on to Trump, but there's even more to it that we could get to.
Well, first of all, I want to reflect on a word that you used, and I think you helped make this word clear, and that's the word apocalyptic. Apocalypse is the lifting of the veil. So you can have the lifting of the veils. You can have the revelation of these evils being exposed, and that is apocalyptic. So that's a helpful understanding about these movements, that they're not really about the end of the world. They're simply about the end of the reign of iniquity. And certainly, we can get into this a little more when we talk about QAnon. There is not just a resonance between Christianity and this desire for the end of iniquity, but there's also the connection between that and what we would call the New Age movement and the idealistic New Thought movement, and people who have been following Gandhi and Martin Luther King and so on. So, I think that we'll talk a little bit about this later, but people who are politically uninformed, just coming to it right now, they delve into this conspiracy history or whatever, and they get to know a little too much about a lot too little. And so, you know, you can see that there's a connection as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think you make a key point. It's people that don't have political experience, but, you know, have loaded themselves into this movement because they're desperate, really. I mean, it's economic desperation, yes, absolutely, but it's also sort of a moral malaise. And, you know, they're seeing what's happening, you know, to their kids and what's happening to the church and what they've been hearing for a couple of decades about pedophilia. Mm-hmm. and the immorality that they see all around them in the media and particularly in entertainment. Yeah. You know, somebody's got to come up with some kind of way to stop this flood. I mean, you know, including, you know, of course, abortion being perhaps the number one illustration of iniquitous evil, where they believe you're destroying a human life, and they're allowing that, and they've legalized that. So you look for when you're desperate, you look for get a handle on this. Well, you're not going to do what intellectuals do, read a bunch of books. You're going to find a person who can represent this. So there's a part of this that I think we should inject right now, which is the myth or the folklore that Trump was brought into this by this secret group, the Q group. Yes. Right? It wasn't his idea. And, you know, I was pretty surprised once I started researching this, how pervasive this is, this notion that Trump...
Byron,
sure.
Byron, we're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to come back and talk more about Q and QAnon, okay? I don't want to interrupt you, but this is really what I wanted to get to. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back on WikiPolitiki with Byron Malitzas talking about Trumpism, apocalypticism, and QAnon, etc. We'll be back shortly.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Okay, we're back with Byron Belitzos. We had a conversation a couple of years ago, which actually first introduced me to QAnon. And you had reported that QAnon, you had gone to this event called Contact in the Desert, which is largely about UFOs, etc. And you reported that all of a sudden there were these pro-Trumpers trumpeting this QAnon narrative. So that was my first introduction to it. So why don't you give us some background on that, as you just started doing?
Well, it's interesting as you bring that up about that was Contact in the Desert, you know, sort of like the Burning Man of UFO, you know, ufology. You know, like 3,000 people at this thing. And it was David Wilcock, who I think most of your listeners know. about, had put together a panel there with several people. One of them was a QAnon follower, very prominent young guy, and I was amazed at how people were screaming and howling with sort of glee, you know, by what this guy was saying. There's like 1,200 people in this huge auditorium. And, you know, I've certainly heard of Q. And what this is helpful for us right now, Steve, for our inquiry, is to see that there is kind of a left liberal version of this and a right wing apocalyptic version of this. Because, you know, David Wilcock, you know, Wilcock is, as you know, also a purveyor of Q. Mm-hmm. Right? I guess you do. Yes. And most people do. And because he, you know, and the connection has to do with the so-called white hats, right? So this is the underground movement that comes out maybe through the Pentagon and military intelligence and other places in the 60s, where these elements in the U.S. government mainly vowed that they would take down the cabal that was responsible for the JFK assassination. And that group, supposedly, you know, several dozen, I think 200 generals, I think they said, that group wasn't left or right, okay? And they began to leak out their plans to various people who were popular, one being Wilcock. But it's believed that they then approached Trump. So they approached both the right and the left, right? So that this secret group, underground good guys group, the White Hats, also, you know, Benjamin Fulford was a mouthpiece for them. And in a way, you know, some others such as, you know, well, just leave it with those that group, that's enough. That they wanted this out to the whole population, not just to the right. Mm-hmm. And so really the only person that was representing this on the left, you might say, is Wilcock. So anyway, that discussion there was supposedly liberal people. But there were all these Trumpists who sort of crossed a line from left to right. There really wasn't a particular right wing. It's more that these are anti-satanic people. And so if Trump happened to be the guy professing this, then they were going to follow Trump.
Let me ask you a quick question here. So you've been, we can talk more about your, what you've been studying all of these years and your connection. But do you think there's any validity to this white hat thing, or is it just mythology?
I think it's both. I think almost all of this is a combination of folklore, mythology, and real facts. Mm-hmm. I have argued to my friends that are looking at this, who are skeptical about it, that there has to be something like the White Hats, not only because it's coming from both the left and the right, but also because if there weren't, we would be hopeless because, you know, we know, at least, you know, in my circles, we know that 9/11 was an inside job. We feel that the JFK assassination was something done by the deep state. We know because it's been proven that Martin Luther King's assassination was something that J. Edgar Hoover ordered, and things like this. So why isn't there somebody somewhere in the depths of Washington that is trying to stop this? They can't all, you know. In other words, it's just mathematically impossible that there wouldn't be something like white hats.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it that way. And I say that's also because as a believer in the Christian message, which is that there is a kind of spirit that flows over the earth and that brings forward people who are truth tellers and truth lovers in every walk of life. And so there's going to be somebody in the Pentagon who knows what really went on in 9/11, for example, or, you know, going back to the 60s, who really know the story of why the Secret Service stood down and why, you know, why JFK was so vulnerable and why he did get killed and know that backstory. I mean, it's just got to be. So So, you know, when we say apocalyptical, what we're saying is that these things are such deep evils that, number one, they have to be exposed eventually. And number two, there has to be some kind of a movement of the people to put an end to this. And the left was going to do that in the 60s, you know, 70s. And the left got kind of, as we discussed, you know, earlier, and in my recent essay, the left was knocked out of contention for that role at a certain point, and so the right took over.
How did the left got knocked out of contention? Or they knocked themselves out? What's your take on that?
My take is, you know, having been an activist from the late 60s and 70s, and having, you know, pretty far left, and I could see infiltration of things we were doing. I had my own group at one point on a campus. We knew we were infiltrated. That, you know, I was in demonstrations where we found provocateurs. I mean, like right there in front of us. And it just went on and on. But then later it was exposed that there was a COINTELPRO program, particularly directed at the Black Panthers, but also at the anti-war movement, that destroyed it, basically. I mean, and it was a vicious program. It really was effective. And particularly the Marxist left was infiltrated, taken down, and that's fairly well documented. So, you know, but I think there was a point at which the left regrouped and decided, we're not going to go there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So right. You see that, you know, and we're going to do our best, you know, the Amy Goodmans of the world, you know, and Amy knows about the deep state. You can, if you know her, you know, her background, but she won't go there because she can't exist if she goes there. She won't, her funding and her, you know, she'll be attacked. She knows that. And you just can't do it. And, you know, David Ray Griffin is somebody that really found this out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the story of Griffin, because Griffin was, you know, just, you know, one of the people I studied at Union Theological Seminaries and one of the greatest theologians of our time. And he stumbled upon 9/11, and then he wrote these important books about it. And he was amazed and disgusted to find that the left would not embrace any of his work at all. I mean, like, yep. not at all. And, you know, the so-called Christian left also didn't embrace. So, I mean, and he's written pieces about this to try to explain to himself and to us, you know, those who support him. Why did the left turn its back on 9/11 truth? You know, what's the answer to that?
That's a good question. Fear, I guess.
Fear of this kind of recrimination from the deep state.
Right. The way fear of being deplatformed, like, what's her name? I can't remember her name. That's how deplatformed she was. when she came out and, you know, made some statements about 9/11, she got kicked off the air. I'll remember her name at some point. But that was also true of, you know, Phil Donahue being opposed to the invasion of Iraq, and he got removed from MSNBC. But we're talking about people who are trustworthy, considered left-leaning. Mark Crispin Miller had the same thing happen when he put out his book on the stolen election in 2004. Basically, he got blackballed by all of those, you know, Mother Jones, Noam Chomsky, all of these, you know, icons of the established, what one might consider the far left. And so what you are saying in your article, because we can just jump right off of that, is that because the left got left, the right got right. And these quote-unquote conspiracy theories or memes somehow drifted into the right wing. And, you know, as you reported about this QAnon phenomenon, that seems to be what has happened. So say more about that. How did these conspiracy memes, starting with the, you know, you and I met, I believe, at a 9/11 truth thing sometime around 2003, 2004, how did that get shifted? And I remember most of the people over there were left-wing progressives. including Van Jones, who signed that statement that got him fired from the Obama administration. How did these memes drift all across the political spectrum to the right? Whoops, we got an in and out there. Are you there? Okay. Okay, we got a connection problem. Are you there, Byron?
Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Now I can hear you.
Got you back. Okay. Yeah, I heard some of it, and some of it I did not hear, but I'll fill in, I think, what the points you were making, if I can. We left liberal types, West Coast types, you know, we didn't realize what was happening in the center of the country. And I fell into the 9/11 truth movement almost by accident as a publisher, published a book about it. And the author, a guy named Jim Mars, I thought, wow, this could be great. I'm going to put this out to all my friends on the left, and we're going to sell, you know, thousands of copies of this expose about 9/11. And we couldn't do it. We couldn't get any place for him to speak on the left. And he eventually said, well, Byron, you're from San Francisco, but I'm from Texas. And and the 9/11 Truth Movement is a right-wing movement. This is a libertarian. It's a movement on the right. I said, no, it isn't. And man, was he right about that? And that's I think just the trajectory of this thing was that the left wasn't going to pick this up, and just ordinary people in the middle of the country, you know, came to see that, you know, this correlates with other issues that they see with the federal government being criminalized, and they picked it up and they ran with it, and then much later, you know, 10 years later, they became the Trump movement. Mm-hmm. And that's not the only constituency. There are other constituencies, but it's a big alliance that was put together by Steve Bannon.
Exactly.
Right. It wasn't Trump who did that. You know, Trump was you know, kind of a just a, you know, figurehead, but Bannon and people like Bannon could see that they could, you know,
you know, one of the things that I became aware of course, last year with everybody locked down, what do people do? They dive deep into watching many of these things on YouTube, etc. And my wife Trudy and I watched a 12-part series on QAnon, which was favorable, of course, to QAnon about their narrative. And they leaned very heavily on the Satanism of Hollywood. They had a lot of clues and cues about the Satanist symbols and memes and themes and so on. And they made a pretty good case for this decadence, which, of course, I could see people in traditional religion living in the Middle West and so on going, what's going on with these people out there in Hollywood? What kind of stuff are they purveying? And so I could see where that would be a real match for people who are conservative and are wondering, whatever happened to the country that I grew up in?
Yeah, so, you know, it goes even back, you know, to the early days of rock and roll and there's, you know, books on this and documentation of the fact that allusions to Satan or Satanism were everywhere in you know, the late 60s, early 70s, you know, mid 70s rock and roll. I mean, that's just absolutely the case. And so, you know, these are parents going back to that period that saw, I mean, it's not just that it was, you know, kind of broadcasting, you know, sexual immorality. It's that they were literally talking about Satan and Satanism in their lyrics. And so you see it, you know, going through these decades until you get this huge reaction. That's understandable. Whereas, you know, the liberal left was like, well, you know, abortion is, you know, a right, a woman's right, you know. So the liberal left was seemed to be playing into the hands of what these people saw as satanic. Now, you know, obviously the liberal left isn't consciously doing such a thing, but it just seemed to be that the left was getting more secularized and more liberal about more what they considered to be Christian morality, and the right was getting more and more uptight about it. So it, you know, had to blow up into these conspiracy ideas that there is a satanic element that's consciously fomenting these things in you know, in Hollywood, in Wall Street, behind the scenes. And then on top of that, we have the evidence that you cited, and evidence that has now come out from the research on child trafficking, which is, you know, really explicit now in the, you know, various films and books that we now have that prove this is a worldwide ring of pedophilia that's in the Catholic Church, and it pervades many institutions, not just the United States, but in England and Europe and even you know, China, you know. So, you know, the whole thing comes together. So it had to be some political candidate that was going to make political capital out of this perception. Mm-hmm. And so Trump falls into this. And, you know, Trump doesn't really believe in Christianity. You can really kind of tell that. He doesn't really have a feel for it. But, you know, these guys are voting for him, and he's going to their, you know, these Christian events, and they're sitting there praying over him, and he's receiving because this is his constituency. So yeah, he's going to do a few things for them that they, more than a few things that they want, but he's going to do things that he wants, which is, you know, rolling back taxes on business, for example. So, you know, it was a quid pro quo, I think, in his mind. But getting back to Q, I think that the mythology that Q invited Trump into this is not totally, I think that there's got to be something to it, and I can't prove it. But I actually, you know, turned around recently in my thinking that there has to have been some underground movement that drafted Trump into this role. And you see it in things that Roger Stone has said, and that's pretty explicit, but in the lesser spokespeople in Trump movement have added a lot of detail to that story.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We're going to be back and talk about your presence at the January 6th event at the Capitol. This is Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki. We're going to be back with you very shortly.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America. 200 food banks strong.
Okay, Steve Behrman back on Wiki Politiki with our guest Byron Politzos. Byron, I so appreciate that you're in flux about what you really believe. So now we're going to talk about what you actually saw. You actually attended the event. events at the Capitol on January 6th. So why don't you download your experience of this time?
Thank you, Steve. I hope that I addressed your earlier questions. It was cutting in and out on Skype here. So, but anyway, let's proceed. The thing that moved me was, you know, just kind of the coincidence that I now live in the D.C. area. But also, I was tracking about the claims about election theft. And because of the experiences I've had with the 9/11 Truth Movement and other things like that, I began to really look behind what the left was saying about this and what the mainstream media was saying, but it started to look at what the alt-right was saying about it and what the Trump supporters were saying. And I began to kind of, I was really getting amazed because I was seeing that there is some evidence of this. I've seen so many pieces of evidence that I tend to lean in the direction that there was very significant fraud, despite the way this is spun in the left media and in the MSM. So that was the reason why I decided to go down with a friend. And, you know, it took a little bit of guts because I've never been to a Trump rally, didn't know what to expect. When we came up out of the subway, there were thousands of people that were walking, you know, from where the rally had occurred toward the Capitol building. And, you know, we were immediately kind of astounded by the numbers of people and kind of like the passion and fervence that we could see. And so we walked towards this thing. And when we got there, it was about 2 p.m. when we got to the Capitol itself. And there was already, God, looked like there were already, I don't know, 50,000 people there or more. So Trump's speech had ended at 1:11 p.m. And we got there. So people started moving in that direction after that, most of them. So when we got there, almost everybody had arrived or was arriving. And it was really the largest crowd I ever remember seeing. And I've been to some really big demonstrations. And I don't know. I mean, you know, you get with a group and you can feel something in your gut about the group. And what I felt about these people was deep sincerity. I felt a kind of a spirit that had a kind of depth to it that brought tears to my eyes. I mean, I'm going to just say that. I mean, it was amazing energy. And it was endearing in a way, but then I started looking at some of their signs, right? Some of the signs, were obviously, obnoxious, but most of the stuff was not. Most of it was this is our country, we want it back kind of thing. And we were fairly close to the Capitol building, let's say 500 feet away by the time we stopped walking, and we did not see anything. You couldn't see it. What was happening was on the inside, and I think your listeners may know that the incursion occurred in the middle of Trump's speech. And so that's why I have said that it's hard to believe that people would have skipped his speech to do that. So the people that went in there, why would they not have listened to their great hero and idol and then go there? Why did they go there when he was just beginning to speak at 1 o'clock, whenever that was? So that's one perception. But the other thing I would just say is that the crowd was just immense, and if you look at the images of that, you can't believe how big it is. And also if you look at the speech that he was giving in the rally near the Washington Monument, that looks like 300,000 people. I mean, that's just so huge. And you just think to yourself, look at these people. I mean, they're different races, different classes, age groups, not that many black people, but there were black people. And you just think, wow, this is like real America. It's not sort of the left that you would see on the streets in San Francisco. No, it's not that, but this is just ordinary people. And so I was, but of course below the surface, these people have this belief system, which is you know, really, really, you know, propaganda, you know, they're victims of propaganda. But both sides, all sides are victims of propaganda. You know, I mean, you know, the left is also, you know, what did you say you called the stink of propaganda? You have, you know, we're all victims of a kind of propaganda right now. So I can't find myself just siding with the left or the right. You have to have some sympathy for all sides. And that's the transpartisan commitment that you have and that I have, that you look with sympathy. And I look upon these people with some sympathy, not with the people that were doing violence, obviously, but with the people that were in that crowd. I'm sympathetic with their concerns to the extent that that their beliefs are what they are. So I'll just put it that way.
Well, you know, it sounds like, as you said earlier, that there is a sense of moralism. I mean, fundamentally, we all, except for the, you know, the sociopathogens among us, we all want to see various evils be diminished, if not eliminated. And we're looking at, you know, the evils of poverty. We're looking at the evils of destruction of the environment. And I'm sure that if you asked most of the people in that group, they would have been just as concerned about poverty and the environment and so on. And the fact that so many people showed up out of their own moral fervency, even if you, as you say, it was misdirected by propaganda, that's a good sign.
You know, I really thought it was a positive sign in the sense that why would people, you know, interrupt their lives in the middle of the work week and, you know, come to Washington and be part of this thing and not just like, you know, 10,000 people like you might see but like this immense crowd of people. You know, this is a huge movement and they believe things. I put it this way. I think, you know, there are issues, political issues, but this is existential. This has to do with the perception that there is a global criminal class that's calling the shots and that's delivering to us these evils that we see all around us. You know, just, you know, wars that go on for 20 years, you know, the Afghanistan war, 9/11 is never resolved as to what, who did that, and on and on. The kind of, you know, breakdown of social cohesion that everybody sees and the inequality that everybody sees. This isn't just political. There's something deeper going on. There's some kind of a leadership, a cabal that a Christian would say this is rooted in the original satanic sort of conspiracy that Jesus came to put an end to. And so I'm sympathetic as a Christian, you know, studying Christian theology and a theologian, that there is such supernatural forces. And I'm not saying I know for sure, but I sense that there's truth to it that anybody from any point of view can grasp, that there's something not just evil, but iniquitous. It's intentional. They pulled off 9/11. They got away with it. They pulled off the assassinations in the 60s and got away with it. I'll just take Jake for example. The Martin Luther King assassination, they got away with that, and we have the truth about that is out. But we can't get that covered even by the left, that Martin Luther King was assassinated on the orders of J. Edgar Hoover. You can't. I was the publicist for Bill Pepper for his book about that. I couldn't get coverage from the left or the right. Exactly. For that story. And so there's something wrong here in this picture. And so I say that no wonder there's something like an apocalyptical Christian movement that is trying to deal with it from the right.
So this is really interesting because, I mean, in a certain sense, you know, on the left side, the progressive side, they're looking at things like climate change. They're looking at the environmental collapse, peak this, peak that, the end of our civilization and so on. And, you know, science has plenty of evidence that we're on our way to that form of hell in a handbasket. But you're saying that these people are really seeing not so much the end of the world, but they're seeing the moral decay and depravity coming to such a peak that it can't continue. Is that what I'm hearing?
They're seeing that there is still this remnant of the satanic elements that they believe and biblically were present, that Christ came to put an end to, and that these people actually killed him, and he was just a turning point in the history of the earth was this presence of this being named Christ, and that it's now come to a head. This is what the prophecies said. This is what even the Jewish prophets said, that this thing would come to its culmination. So what we may see here is that the cabal that is linked to these forces, these are humans linked to these supernatural dark forces, is coming to its end. And whatever we can do to put together a coalition of the left and the right, you know, we need both sides. We need both perspectives. We need all perspectives on this, how we could put that together and not be divided and not be projecting onto the Trump, onto these people who are, you know, they're just looking for leadership. So why can't we have a transpartisan leadership for a movement to bring down these evils? You know, put an end to war, put an end to this kind of exploitation of the environment. You know, who or what is going to do that? Well, the people of the world have to do that. We all together, left and right. So that's really kind of the upshot of this whole thing, I think you would agree with, is that without the participation of all sides, we can't really make this work. And that if there is such a thing as a cabal, that the cabal is going to be able to prevail, because we're having a food fight between the left and the right when we should be uniting.
Yeah, I mean, this is you anticipated my last question, because the work that I'm doing, of course, you can hear it in the themes for Wiki Politiki Radio, bringing left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. That's what we really have to do, and it requires a certain level of political maturity and being able to liberate ourselves from the tribes that are essentially and the forces that are keeping us separate. So how do we bring the progressive left and populist right, if you will, together in an evolutionary uprising? How do we stand up to the censorship and misinformation, which is really, I think now people on the left are beginning to wake up to that. What do you see are some of the pathways to creating this transpartisan movement of an uprising, waking up and wising up? How do you see that?
I think the wisdom says you're likely to be projecting. You're likely to be attributing things to your opponents that aren't true, that you're projecting your own shadow. And what we see with this, it's just so easy to project onto the right and the Trump followers our own shadow. So withdraw that and enter sympathetically into what they're talking about. Don't accept the toxic elements, obviously, but look at their evidence about election theft. Look at what they're saying about what's happening immorally with our culture. You know, look at that through their eyes, and maybe they'll start looking at things through our eyes, us being the left. But somebody's got to start. So, you know, what we're saying in the transpartisan movement is it starts with me. Look at those who are obviously profiting by enhancing our projection, by building up the projection in the mainstream media, especially. But where do we go? You know, for media, you know, where do we find? Well, we have, you know, a few voices like you who are in the media who are standing up for a transpartisan view. That's where we need to go and find that methodology of unifying all sides of the planet, all the countries, all the people, and the left and the right against these things, which are obviously destroying our livelihoods and our planet. So I'd put that way.
Yeah, you know, people were looking at the whole COVID thing right at the beginning as well. Finally, we have a common quote unquote foe. We have a common thing that we're all facing together. Maybe this will be the opportunity. And as we've seen how the narratives have been manipulated, that hasn't been the case. But I see, as you do, that right now we have the opportunity because there is a dissatisfaction with corporate liberalism. Yes, Biden was elected, or maybe he wasn't, but yes, he's president. But I think that right now, once people have had their time of, oh my God, there's adults back in the room, that's a good sense of relief. But now let's look at the propaganda and censorship and repression that's coming from the mainstream press. So I really appreciate your perspective. We'll be talking with you again, Byron, because this is an ongoing conversation as we begin to learn how to listen to what we've projected, the shadow of the other side that we've projected from ourselves. So I appreciate this so much. Thank you, Byron Galitzos, for joining us on WikiPolitiki. Steve Behrman, thank you, Byron.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, sir. And I'd love to come back. Thanks so much.
You will. Okay, we'll be back next week. This is Steve Behrman.